Alex, I believe I have reached the equivalent of nirvana.
Tell me more.
Well, I have been sleeping on my cozy earth sheets.
Wow.
And when I get up in the morning, I put on my fantastic jogger suit.
Yes.
Which is a funny way to put it, but you started saying that, so I'm just going to keep on going. And it is opening my mind to things I didn't know I could open my mind to.
Casey, all I have to say is, welcome to the other side.
It's incredible, Alex.
I've lived two lives. One of them is before Cozy Earth, and one is after.
Which is right now.
That's right. We're talking Cozy Earth. They make incredible, soft, lovely, temperature-controlled bedding and cozy wear.
Cozy Earth makes the best clothes I think I've ever touched, that have ever touched my skin.
Casey, I'm right there with you.
It's soft, it's breathable, it's temperature regulated, it looks good, it feels good, which makes it good.
And how about this for good? All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. So if for some completely batshit reason you don't love these sheets, you can return them.
Now, Alex, right around the corner is Mother's Day. If you haven't already done something, which you should have,
yeah,
now's your moment. Go buy your mom some Cozy Earth, because it is the thing that will help her sleep at night. It's the thing that will help keep her comfortable at all moments of her life. And that's what you want for your mom.
So she isn't up all night thinking about what a disappointment her children are.
Exactly, because they didn't get her Cozy Earth. You don't want to be on that level.
Well, Casey, here's some exciting news. All Completely Arbitrary listeners get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. Again, that's promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at Cozy Earth. So get yourself cozy. Get your mom cozy. Hell, get your dad cozy and your friends cozy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to stop there, you know?
Make the earth cozy with Cozy Earth.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. My name is Alex Croson. I'm alongside the incredible, the edible, Casey Clapp.
Edible is so apt this month, week, season.
Casey, that's Alex right. Croson.
This is me, Casey Clapp. I am edible. I am indelible. I am
spreadable, like a butter.
Like a butter. I can't believe I'm not butter, though.
I can't believe you're not butter.
Well, you better believe it. I am not. I'm buttery, though, let me tell you.
Casey, I don't know where that's headed. But you have
smooth is what it where is going.
Speaking of smooth, you got a couple of new additions to your body art this weekend.
I do. Yes, I do.
Please tell us about. I can see them. Maybe we'll put photos on the Instagram post for this episode.
Yeah, that would be great.
What do you got, Case? New tattoos.
I got some new tattoos. I went to the also edible, indelible Sean Hebrink of Bloodroot Tattoos. Everyone should look up their stuff, look up Sean's work, and get some work from him. He is spectacular. So I added in some or a new piece to my armoretum, which he's done most of the cones along my arm, which I have several. If you want to get any information on that, we got a Patreon about it, don't
Ooh.
We? Anyway, I decided that for many years now, I wanted to get a dogwood. It's my mother's favorite tree. And I was going to get an actual tree of it, but then in my experience getting tattoos, trees as a whole thing are a lot, and you can't really do good detail without getting them really big. And I didn't want this one to be super big.
I see.
So instead, I just got the native Pacific dogwood flower tattooed right on my arm to clear out the top side of my wrist.
Yes.
And I think it looks really nice.
It does look great. I love the little leaf coming off the side of it.
Thank you. It was his idea. And I was like, yep, I think it's a good move. Yeah. And yeah, so I got that and I decided I didn't need only cones in my armoretum. So it is, in fact, more than just a coniferous arm now.
Yeah, that's right.
And then on the inside of my chest, I got a, it's called a Gorgon image. Are you familiar with this? I think we've talked about it a couple times.
I sure am, Casey. I'm a big fan of Greek myth.
Me too. And this is the Gorgons. They're three sisters, the only mortal one of which is classically known as Medusa.
Mm-hmm.
And it is an image of like this this face that is kind of a gargoyle-like face with like its tongue sticking out. Like it's probably the most hardcore tattoo I have.
Yeah.
And then it has like snakes coming out from the hair and kind of a stick wooden kind of ring, almost like a wreath of sort of twigs and sticks around it, which are in fact poison ivy.
Okay.
Because I am extremely allergic to poison ivy and poison oak and all the other things that come along with it. And so I kind of like that idea because it's a protector. Legend has it that Athena and Zeus wore this Gorgon image as a pennant on their, or a pendant on their shields or on their capes when they would go into battle.
That's
because,
right.
As is known, Medusa or these Gorgons, if you look at them, if you look at their mug, they turn you to stone.
Turn to stone.
So the idea is that as a protector kind of thing, you know, it's having this, you know, really powerful thing that, you know, would turn your enemies to stone as you go in. So I just like that. And then it's part of, you know, the whole Greek mythos, which of course you are big about. I like it because I enjoy those myths and like the creation stories and all of these like legends and like heroes and all that kind of stuff. I just think that kind of not science fiction, what am I thinking? Just myth is really creative.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like
folk tales.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and I have a couple books about like the Native American folk tales, and I love it. And the whole I don't know. I'm just fascinated by how people like explain things because there's a lot of trees things that go along with that. You know, Ovid's Metamorphosis, just how trees became trees. You know, based on these, you know, old events.
And Casey, speaking of explaining things, congrats on your new tattoos.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
They turned out great. I especially like the Medusa one.
Oh, thanks. Shucks.
But speaking of explaining things, we have something to explain this week.
You sure do.
And that is a tree.
Oh, Alex, I didn't know that's where you're going. I was expecting something completely different.
Well, Casey, we're here to talk this week about the delicious, one of my favorite fruits of all time. The mango tree.
Mango.
Casey, the scientific name on this?
Yes, Mangifera. Mangifera indica is the name of it.
Indica?
Yeah, because it's from India.
Okay. And got that, it.
Yeah.
It's not related to marijuana?
No, but it is the same thing where you have the colloquially known as indica is actually cannabis indica, and that means that it's of India.
Got it. Well, Casey, let's imagine, as we do every episode, that you and I are walking through a mango grove.
Oh, this is going to be so delicious.
Possibly in India.
Yes, very likely in India, but also could be literally anywhere.
Yeah. I also, can we say Mexico? I want to go to Mexico.
Yeah, I think it grows in Mexico, I'm pretty sure. I've had it in Ecuador before.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not too far from there?
No, not too far.
And we have a big knife, and we're just pulling mangoes off the tree and slicing them there and eating them up. No. Casey, let's talk about this tree.
Oh, the mango. So the mango, I've seen this tree a couple different times, but at the time I didn't pay too much of attention to it just because there are so many tropical species of trees that they can get a little bit sort of, I don't know, daunting if you don't live there all the time and you kind of look out, you can kind of tell things apart.
Right. We've talked about before that the tropics are like
bonkers.
A madhouse of species.
It's exactly
There's
right.
a lot going on down there.
Yeah. And so this was in this little kind of eco village that I was visiting, and I saw it, and I was like, oh my God, that's, and it kind of struck me. But it's the same thing as like you see something growing, and your brain forgets for a second that it's from a thing, like it grows a tree.
Right.
And you're like, oh my God, is that a persimmon? And you're like, yeah, that they, you can get those from a tree. Like that's where they grow.
Yeah.
And it kind of took me a moment, and then they were like, yeah, that one doesn't look ripe, so don't worry about it. Because I was like, can we just eat that mango? And they're like, well, you could, but it's going to taste pretty bad.
Yeah. Were there any good ones on that tree?
No, we had to find another tree. And then I think we just like threw sticks at it. Like even the people who I was like, we were the only people at this place. Because we went in the off season.
Oh.
And so they were like just hitting it with sticks until the thing fell down, and then it just tasted terrible.
Oh no.
But it wasn't bad. It just wasn't very good because it was just becoming ripe.
I'd be so sad.
I know. It was a little bit of a letdown. But they had other mangoes that were in season, so we ate those.
Yummy.
But a mango is a tropical tree that has been in cultivation for anywhere between 3,000 and 5,000 years. I've heard a lot of different things.
Okay.
And it's a species of tree that has been, I think there is in Mangifera, there's between, I think I found 30 to 40 different species. Wikipedia puts it all up to like 69 species.
Are those all different species that you would still call mango?
Yeah. It's kind of like how you have cherries that you can eat.
Right.
But then there's also like 100 some different species of cherries that we just don't eat. That
and
are like
they're
little
like little
scrubby
bitter
things
that,
yeah, yeah. That birds go crazy for, but we really wouldn't eat them.
I gotcha.
Yeah. This is the same thing where you have a lot of different mangoes that you can eat. But mango, the common mango they call it, is Mangifera indica. And that is the one that has 200 and some different varieties that we humans cultivate and eat.
Wow.
Versus the species that is actually just different species of things, just like you have the black pine, the white pine, the red pine, you know, different kinds of pines. You have different kinds of mangoes that have different fruit. Some may be astringent, some are really big, some may have big pits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some just may not grow the way we want or where we want for whatever reason.
Also like different leaves and
yeah, exactly.
Limb bark.
Yeah.
Limb bark. I was about to say limb structure, and I cut myself off. And I said, no, that sounds dumb. That sounds like you're trying to be smart and you're not.
Yeah, but you would have. Yeah.
But what I was trying to say is like morphology.
Yeah.
They just look different, I could have said.
I really, you know what? You can just sound smart. But let's see. Okay, so down to what it looks like. Mango is actually kind of a big tree. It can be a shade tree, Alex. Like you usually expect like fruit trees that you'd get and that would make, you know, edible things. They generally are kind of small trees like apples and pears and cherries.
They're manageable size.
Yeah, right. And I'm sure that in where they plant these and where they grow them commercially, they would keep them down because they're mostly, you would not find a grove of mangoes other than in a plantation orchard where that's where they're growing.
Oh, okay.
Because they also grow in the tropics, and as we already noted, tropical places generally will always have 100 different species growing in 1 acre, 1 hectare of land.
Yeah.
And so then you'll never get, or you generally won't get, like one big grove of a bunch of the same species of tree.
I see.
So you're walking through, you find a mango tree. First thing you're going to say is, wow, this is a huge tree. It gets up to 100 feet tall.
Wow.
There are canopy trees out there in the tropics. They
you're
will
kidding.
Grow all the way from Southeast Asia and South Asia down into the Malay Peninsula. And they grow as these big, huge, emergent canopy trees, 100 to 100 and some 60 feet tall.
This is news to me.
Isn't it wild? I would not have expected it, Alex.
That's huge. That's fucking massive for what I thought they were.
Yeah, right? And this is
how
now
about that?
Our mango that we're talking about today generally tops out about 100 feet.
Okay,
that's
still
as much
big.
As it's going to get. Yeah, still pretty huge. Gets really nice, big, long, big stem, main trunk. The bark is kind of like a light gray to a dark gray. It's not really broken up in sort of some fancy fashion. It's very much kind of a little warty, kind of a little normal. It's irregularly, ununiformly kind of split up.
Hmm.
So it doesn't really strike you as like, wow, that's really interesting bark. To me, I think this is, as we would say here, utility bark.
Hell yeah, man.
It does the job. It just gets it done. And
that's
about
great.
It.
Thanks for using that.
Oh, thank you for inventing it. but the leaves are so beautiful. This is one thing that really struck me about this tree is that it has like really bright bright yellow mid veins and like veins coming off, but then not bright yellow, but like a lime greenish kind of thing. But then the leaves are really a dark, dark green. Like they're super shiny, dark green with these really contrasting main veins going through.
Yeah, very contrasty. Very tropical looking, very houseplant looking.
Isn't that exactly right? Isn't that funny how we would like see that and it's like, oh, that's totally tropical.
Yeah.
But the thing that, of course, is the big thing about this is how these trees create this amazing fruit that you obviously love.
Yes.
My partner Hannah, her favorite fruit, mango.
Hell yeah, Hannah.
It is, it's absolutely a delicious fruit. I've had it many, many times myself. Love it to death. It is a drupe, which is off of a panicle.
Wow.
How do you feel about those words?
Okay. Well, I know droop.
Yes. Okay.
Droop as in, cherries.
You got this.
Are droops.
That's right.
See, I always confuse droop and poem, and I won't do it today.
No, Alex, today's the day you will stand, you'll fight for your rights as a botanical expert.
Yes, with my limb bark and my droops. So
your limb bark is smooth, baby.
Droops, we're talking cherry, mango.
Yeah.
One more.
A peach.
Peach, of course. Yeah. A stone fruit. Or
exactly.
Droops.
Essentially.
Pomes, which is what I usually confuse droop with.
Yeah.
We're talking apple, pear.
Yeah.
Persimmon.
Not persimmon.
Yeah, I was saying things that aren't. I changed halfway through.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to say two things that are, then I'm going to switch without saying and say a bunch of things that aren't.
That's my pattern, Casey.
Yeah, walnut, acorn, pine cone. Those are not pomes. Do you think there could be a pine pome? No, that doesn't make any sense.
You know what? Science.
Make it happen.
Make it happen.
We can slam a bunch of genes together and see if we can create a pine pome.
If we can get Stanley Kubrick to pretend to put someone on the moon, we can surely make a pine pome.
Wait a second, Alex. You can't just drop that in there. Are you telling us that you believe a conspiracy theory?
I'm a moon truther.
Yeah, you're a moon truther that Stanley Kubrick, in fact, faked the moon landing, and not only that, put a bunch of clues in other movies, such as The Shining. Is that what you're telling us right
clues.
Now?
Clues. I love the idea that he's like...
There's moon clues in this movie.
Not telling anybody's killing me. I got to put all these clues in The Shining.
I can't believe that.
Man, I do love that theory, though.
Anyway.
All right. Well, we're cutting back in. I just went on a huge rant about... the conspiracy theory that Stanley Kubrick helped fake the moon landing. Casey, let's talk mango.
The mango. So, of course, a panicle, Alex. Aside from a pome, pine pome, the...
Oh, right.
Yeah. The mango is a droop. Like you said, you came up with some good examples, Alex.
Yeah.
So, the a droop is essentially just a seed with a seed inside like a hard nut or hard stone, which is why they call it stone fruit, a pit, and then a fleshy outer coating. Cherries are obviously the quintessential example that most people know about. If you're in the Northern Hemisphere, if you are in the tropics, the most common pome you probably know about is a mango.
Oh.
And so mangoes are really cool in that they grow in these big, long panicles. They have like 3,000 flowers that come out in these big panicles, which panicle is essentially a kind of inflorescence, which is a flower head that comes out and then branches, and then those branches branch again, and so on and so forth until you get this big, long triangle kind of pyramid of flower that's coming out.
I see.
Yeah, and there's a lot of them, like a ridiculous amount.
A panicle, the mango panicle, looks like a zoomed-in, like... virus molecule.
Oh yeah, kind of does. I see that.
It's got all these little arms with these little bobbles on the end.
I also like the idea of some secret society called the Mango Panicle.
Oh, that's great.
Have you guys read the Mango Panicle? It just came out. It's all over the internet.
We're handing copies to people on this street corner.
Wearing like visored glasses.
Yeah, outside the middle school.
Yeah. Have you guys read the Mango Panicle?
I mean, do you remember those Jesus guys?
Oh, were they outside middle schools?
I mean, guess they were outside my middle school. Yeah,
probably. Mm. Anyway, of course, the mangoes are delicious. Everyone eats them, and it is the one of the most popular fruits in the world, period. End of conversation. It's not the most popular. I couldn't find anything that said that. I even found like essentially a pro mango like organization called mango.org.
Wow.
And they're just all about it. And but they didn't do they couldn't quite say that it's the most popular. They just said it's one of the most populars.
I see.
And for good reason. Like, they're really sweet, they're really delicious, but they have one thing that I was very curious or very thought was quite interesting when I first learned about trees, and this tree specifically, and some of its buddies, is that it is in the Anacardiaceae family.
What in the world is that?
One of the most fun family names you can ever say.
Say it
first
again.
First off, Anacardiaceae.
Anacardiaceae.
Yes, named after the Anacardium, which is a species of tree. In fact, it's specifically a species of tree that we call the cashew, Alex.
It's a family named after a species?
No, actually, I guess it would be named after the... It would be a family named after the genus.
Okay.
But that actually doesn't have... That's usually how it is. So, like, there's... Acer is the genus for maples, and so the family is Aceraceae,
or
it used to be. I think they actually changed that. Pineaceae, right?
Icaceae.
That's the I understand family.
Mm-hmm.
Icaceae. And so the cashew family is the Anacardiaceae. Anacardium is the genus for cashew.
Okay.
And what's famous about Anacardiaceae is its other members, other than these delicious fruit and nut trees. And I say nut because the cashew isn't technically a nut. It's another wackadoodle kind of thing.
Right.
But in that family is other trees like the smoke tree and the Chinese varnish or lacquer tree.
Hmm.
I'm sorry, the Japanese lacquer tree. And then poison oak.
Poison oak, you say?
Ivy. Yes, and sumacs and those other ne'er-do-wells of the world. Now, the reason that this family is so well-known, botanical things, is that it's not only a family that has, like, obviously the mango and a bunch of other different species of plant that we use every single day, it also has these plants that are known to be, like, really virile agents when it touches our skin. Obviously, the poison oaks and everything.
Right.
But because they are either really edible, many of them, or they have these weird effects on us, they have been in, like, the botanical medicine world for centuries and centuries.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, millions of years, or thousands of years, since we really started cultivating them and paying attention. So these trees have been used and discussed and brought up as a potential for almost a billion different things, Alex. And that is what we're going to have to talk about when we come back, and we can get into a little bit more about how delicious these things are, but then how they have a streak, Alex,
that
can cause you quite a bit of pain.
I really thought you were just going to say diarrhea.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, maybe if you eat enough of them, probably.
All right. More about diarrhea after the break. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary.
Casey, you know our future is bright.
Yeah, it is, Alex.
But it's so bright, we gotta wear shades.
What?
Casey and I are now putting on our gooder glasses.
Oh, man. I can't see a damn thing.
Hey, they do the job, huh?
These things are great.
Casey, that's right. This episode is brought to you by Gooder.
It sure is right.
That is G-O-O-D-R. They make fashionable sunnies.
They make fantastic sunglasses. Alex, I got a quick story. When they approached us, I said, I cannot tell you how excited I am about this. They saved me when I was riding my bike across Iowa in Ragbri last July.
Wow.
I couldn't see. I got hit in the eye. So one of my eyes from a week prior would not constrict. It was constantly dilated.
Oh my God.
So I had to wait till it like essentially refixed itself. I ended up needing to wear sunglasses on the entire drive and driving back over. But I had cheap gas station sunglasses.
Yeah.
It was $5 or something.
Yeah.
And they just did not do the job. I was absolutely in hell. And then stopped over at a shop that was there. And then picked up a pair of sunglasses, and it said it was $25. And I was like, what? These are, okay, I'll try them out. I just need a new pair.
Yeah.
All polarized. I put them on my face, and it was like the world had changed.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure I cried, Alex.
Casey,
I love these sunglasses.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. They saved me.
That's amazing, Casey. And they didn't save me yet.
The time will come.
The day will come when I need these glasses and I have them. I do love these sunglasses, Casey. And I was telling you before we started recording, my problem with sunglasses is that I always either buy, like you said, a cheap gas station pair for $6, or I could debase myself by spending $200 on a pair of sunglasses at Nordstrom or some shit. I ain't doing that. Casey, Gooder are the perfect middle ground.
They sure are. Starting at $25, they're all 100% polarized. You can look into water and see through it.
Oh my God.
Which is incredible.
Is that true?
It is. They're polarized. Yeah.
Oh, well, these would be great for fishing, eh?
Exactly.
And they would be great for cycling, working out, golfing, going to the beach, hiking, or just walking around town.
Just doing anything. I rode my bike across Iowa with these sunglasses. People wear them while they are jogging. They stay on your face. They don't bounce. They are excellently made. I cannot recommend Gooder enough.
And Casey, they're pretty cool. In fact, you and I got a couple pairs.
Oh, yeah. What did you get?
Mine are called Hellhound Hallucinations.
Ooh, Alex, I got The Future is Void.
Amazing.
Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, that's the name of our sunglasses.
Yes.
Not our new catchphrases for completely arbitrary.
Hey, man, you know what I say. Hellhound Hallucinations.
Yeah, he does say that.
And if you want to support this show and try a pair of Gooder, they are giving Completely Arbitrary listeners free shipping. You can go to gooder.com/trees. That's GOODR.com/trees. And use code trees for free shipping. Gooder offers a 30-day money-back guarantee and 100% satisfaction. Again, that's gooder.com/trees. And use code trees for free shipping. We'll see you in the future.
Which is void.
And bright.
Yeah, you look good. You look good.
Hey, let me ask you this. You ever taken a walk and just felt inspired? Maybe you discovered your new favorite restaurant, or popped into the library and found a book that you really wanted to read, or you're like, hey, I think this car dealership used to be a Taco Bell. Well, there's a podcast about this kind of thing now with comedian and actor Alan McLeod, one of the funniest guys. It's called Walking About. It's a new podcast that treks into the simple joy of walking and its connections to health, history, creativity, and of course, community. In each episode, Alan invites a friend to share a little stroll and see where the sidewalk takes him. Alan McLeod has guests including Mike Mitchell, Spoon Man, Spoon Nation for Life. You got Colton Dunn. You got Janet Varney, Eva Anderson, Whitmer Thomas, Gabrus, Ed Begley Jr., Catherine Spears, Andy Richter, and of course, Burger Boy, Nick Weiger. Some of the funniest people. You know this podcast is going to be an absolute hoot. Maybe you could even listen to it while you're taking your walks. So lace up your podcasting shoes and listen to Walking About out now, wherever you get your pods. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Casey, before we get into Poison Oak and Ivy and such, I want to give a quick shout out to, you know what? I'm going to give a pre, we've never done this before. This is huge.
I'm excited.
I'm going to give a pre Golden Cone of Honor.
What?
Yes. A preliminary.
I'm sorry.
Golden Cone of Honor to the mango.
So the first reason I'm surprised about this is that we've never done it before.
Yeah.
The second reason is that I thought we were giving Michelin Cones
of
Honor.
Yes. Well, this is a separate rating system. I don't know what this is. Listen, it's a mess. Okay, it's a mess.
Tell me why. Tell me what's going on.
I am giving the mango an extra bonus point before we begin because of the color of the mango.
Really? You're just skipping everything to hear about that.
Well, I know. I just want to say that I absolutely love the coloration of a mango fruit.
Interesting.
It varies in these beautiful, perfect, natural gradients from this sort of kind of dark lime green to deep red orange to sort of, you know, like a yellow. And then you cut into this bad boy.
Yeah.
And it's just like this golden yellow. It is
just an incredibly gorgeous piece of fruit, Casey.
All right. I'm not going to disagree with you about that. I'm not even going to come close.
And the texture. You can tell by looking at it that it's creamy.
Yeah, you can.
They're so good. I love the color. They give... You know what? I'll say this. Instead of a pre-cone or whatever, yeah. whatever shit,
uh-huh.
this mango gets the Croson stamp of approval.
The Croson stamp of approval.
Yeah.
I actually have a stamp of approval that says Croson stamp of approval, and I'm going to stamp every mango I eat now.
No, I'll tell you what. It gets the Croson stump of approval.
The Croson stump of approval. I feel like that's when you take a mango, put it on a stump, and then like smash it with a hammer or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, Gallagher style.
yeah. you make me sick.
Well,
anyway, Alex.
All right, thank you for indulging me.
Any
Croson
day of the
stump
week.
Of approval.
Ba-bum-ba-goonk.
It's a new thing, and that's the theme song.
Thanks. Well,
whoa.
Here's the thing, Alex. I get poison oak very badly. I've told you this before, right?
Yeah, which confuses me because, like, doesn't everybody?
No, that's the thing.
No?
No. There's a gradient. So let's back up.
Okay.
Anacardiaceae. It's this family, right?
Yeah.
And it's a family of trees. It has poison oak, poison ivy. So this family, it has these all these plants. And these plants, most of them, and there's a whole bunch. I think there's like some 680 plants in this whole family.
Wow.
Or species, rather. And each of them, most of them, will to some degree or another produce this chemical in their tree somewhere, in their plant.
Okay.
And it's called urushiol.
It's one of those?
Yeah, it's one of those.
Say it one more time.
Dang it.
Say it the real one.
Urushiol.
Is that your final answer?
Urushiol, yeah.
Urushiol.
Yes.
Okay.
And
I can already feel the emails coming in.
I know. What is it? Spirochetti. And I said, I just like pronouncing it that way. And everyone's like, I'm pretty sure it's like spirochete.
Oh, funny.
Dang it.
Allelopathy.
I like not checking these things beforehand. I did check this one because I wanted to get it right. And I couldn't spell it correctly because I thought it ended with oil, but it's actually the it's switched. Oh. Anyway.
One last time.
Urushiol.
Urushiol. Which is the chemical found in poison oak and poison ivy and
yes.
the poisonous things.
It is the thing that gets us, that affects our skin.
It's an itch agent.
It is. And here's what it does. It has this this long tail of alkalis, and it's this this specific compound that is in an oil-based form, and because it's an oil-based form, it gets into your skin because your skin will let oils kind of move through it.
Right.
So it absorbs into your skin, and then your skin basically is like, what is this thing?
Mm.
And then your white blood cells are like, whoa, 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 invader, this is not of us.
Yeah.
I'm going to kill it. And then it triggers your skin to have this reaction to basically fight away. It's your immune response to having this invaded oil in your skin, right?
Sounds like a great episode of Star Trek Next Generation.
Oh, where they like are morphed down into this this thing and have to like fight blood cells and
yeah,
things?
I was thinking like humans, you know, quote, humans
yeah.
on board, but they're really like, you know, an invasive species.
You know, you think Star Trek, I think the Magic School Bus.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
I mean, yours is more accurate.
Either way, we could probably make that happen.
Yeah, somebody call Gene Roddenberry.
Quick.
I think he might be dead.
Oh, we'll try and get him anyway.
Get his estate.
So this oil, this urushiol, gets into your skin, and it will cause me a huge amount of gruff.
Yeah.
Now, in the very beginning, let's say you're a perfect skinned, pure thing. You've never walked into the woods. You've never been affected or even near poison oak, poison ivy.
An Alex.
Yes. Yes. An Alex, if you will. And you go out there, you start walking around, and you touch one of these leaves.
Yeah.
Because it's on poison oak and poison ivy and poison sumac. Poison sumac's the worst. Man, I got the worst story about that. Oh, God.
Another time.
Anyway, if it just touches you, any part of the plant, then this oil will get onto your skin. If you don't wash it off within a couple hours, your skin reacts.
Mm.
Now, that's generally what'll happen if you have already been exposed to it a couple times. The first time, your immune response is almost nothing, and you don't even need to worry about it. The second time, your body's like, oh, hold on a second. I don't recognize this thing. I've seen you before. You're not welcome. Get out of here. And you get a little rash. The next time, you get like these yellow blisters that are boiling over for 2 weeks, and you're just like, I can't not scratch my arm, and like you just go insane because it's an itch where as soon as you itch it, you're just like, oh, that's the most delightful thing I've ever satisfied. And then you stop and you're like, okay, I'm feeling good. And then your arm, your that little dot on your arm or wherever is just like, I'm still here until it's screaming at you to itch again. Then you rub it and you're just like, oh my God, this feels so good.
Makes me itchy just talking about it.
It's the worst. I'm literally itching myself while I'm talking about it.
Yeah.
And so it's an insatiable feeling. You cannot beat it. And if you breathe it in, like let's say you burn a forest of it, and then you breathe in that smoke, you can actually get it, A, inside your lungs.
Fuck that.
B, you can get a systemic infection where actually your entire body breaks out in like a really low level, itchy everywhere kind of thing.
Wow.
It is one of the most awful things I've ever experienced. I have never breathed it in, but I've got it all over my body because I touched poison sumac in Massachusetts when I didn't know what it was.
Wow.
And I just got it all over my left hand, didn't wash my hand, and just got it literally over every spot in my entire body.
Casey, that's it was awful. Terrible. It covered your whole body?
Yeah, wherever I touched my left hand for like the next 2 days. So I didn't even know what I had touched. I didn't know what I had, like where, what clothes it was on, anything like that.
So the rash is your body's response to the oil to try to get rid of it?
Yes, correct. Because it's basically a foreign agent inside of your body.
Okay. In the way that a fever is your body's response to killing an infection.
Yes.
So it's like a side effect of your immune system, not the infection itself.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. And it's completely non-fatal. Every now and then I've read a couple things where like if you really get a super big infection, sure, it could like cause a, like maybe a cardiac arrest or something like that. But Jesus. I mean, I have no idea how that would happen. Apparently it does, but then who knows if it was a person's body or what it was.
It's so awful.
Generally speaking, though, it's non-fatal. It's just the most extreme itch you've ever had in your life.
Yeah.
And then it goes away after a little while. Usually within 2 weeks, it's pretty much gone. And initially, people were like, this is actually a pretty cool plant. And they started planting it all over the place. Like, they would send it over to Europe and, like, have it in gardens. And people would be stoked about it. And they were like I was saying earlier, they would say, wow, this thing has a really big effect on my skin. So we should study this and see if we can somehow co-opt it to be a positive thing, you know? Like, taking a little tiny bit of a really intense drug might help you because it has this effect on your body.
Right.
You know what I mean? So they started doing this research on it, and historically, whenever you were a medicinal person, you were by definition a plant botanical person because all of our medicine came from plants. We hadn't really invented chemistry at that point.
Right.
So we started to try to like, you know, use it and figure it out, and like boil it into poultices and salves and things like this, and like you take a little bit of this tea, you know, with this plant in it. But then people just kept getting like way wicked itchy rashes all over their body, and then the rash would go away, then whatever they had would also have probably gone away. They're like, yeah, it saved you. And you're like, well, did it? Or did the other thing just go away while I had this obscenely itchy rash all over me?
Wow.
It's the worst, Alex, is what I'm saying.
So I have a quick question about the plant itself.
Yeah. Well, which one?
Poison oak.
Okay.
I've seen poison oak in the woods. I was told by a friend, hey, don't touch that. It's poison oak.
Yeah. Good friend.
And it's like red?
Yes.
But also kind of green?
Mm-hmm.
What's up with the coloration of the... I don't understand. I guess, why is it like that color?
Yeah, and, sure.
You know, speak on that.
Yeah, all right, sure. So it comes out early.
The laziest interviewing ever.
So essentially, they would start red because they haven't, their leaves just kind of unfurl, and a lot of leaves do this, where then they're first coming out, they haven't built up and put all of their chlorophyll out to wherever they go.
I see.
And so they end up just coming out kind of really red and rouge, and then over time become a lot more green as they fully fill up them and develop all their chlorophyll in their cells.
Oh, it's a pre-chlorophyll sort of situation.
Yes.
Okay.
And then they also, when they go dormant for the season, those leaves would turn a bright, bright red as well as they take all their chlorophyll and break that down, and then the leaves drop.
I gotcha.
Most of them are deciduous.
So, Casey, the big question here that I think that's on everyone's mind, is the mango poisonous?
The mango is poisonous.
Wow.
Only in the skin.
No kidding.
No kidding. So most people are not going to get an allergic reaction to the mango if they just like are eating the mango.
Right, the flesh.
Yes, but many people have got allergic reactions on their lips specifically. Hannah being one of these people, while sitting in the back of a truck eating just mango after mango after mango and biting it and, like, you know, sort of scraping it off the skin.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
That is when you will get, if you are predisposed to getting this, so like if you've never touched it, your body doesn't really know, doesn't really care. You actually, it's the ironic thing of everything else, like you get exposed to it. Then the more you're exposed to it, the less.
Right.
Now your body's better prepared for it
each time. It's backwards with this.
Exactly. The more you're exposed to it, the more likely you are to get it.
That's wild, man.
So if I went down there and just started scraping mangoes off the skin of a mango, so the flesh of the mango, then I would probably break out all over my face and just be like completely unhappy for the rest of that trip.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's awful. Yeah, it's amazing, and that is the plant does. This, Alex, they think as a means of bacterial and insect kind of fighting it off. What am I thinking? Defense.
It's a little insecticide.
Exactly.
I have another stump of approval to give out.
No, you're kidding me.
I love this. It's a new gimmick. Who doesn't love a new gimmick?
Hey, I can't think of literally a single person.
My new stump of approval is for plants that have natural insecticide.
Ah, good.
The eucalyptus. Neem.
Yep.
Is one of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And many others,
yeah,
of course.
I know, and et cetera.
Yeah. I love that shit. That's so smart.
I think it's just super cool. It makes everything feel like the plants, like, oh, they're fighting back. You know, you're going to love it. But it does, so it basically makes it so that you would have more of a protection against some plant or some insect eating into the flesh of your fruit.
Right.
Because that is actually for other things to eat, like large animals, so they can go poop them out somewhere else and then end up getting more mangoes.
But Casey.
Yes?
Is not the seed of a mango?
Mm-hmm.
Too large for most animals that would be eating a mango to digest and poop out somewhere else?
That is probably very accurate. I can't think of very many things. The things I can think of are long, long gone.
Like an alligator.
No. Like, yeah.
I think I meant to say dinosaur.
Still have alligators.
Hold on. No, I can explain myself. I think I meant to say dinosaur. But then I thought of an alligator-looking thing, and what came out of my mouth was
alligator.
Like alligators.
The answer is yes.
Long necks. Yes. Brontosaur.
Not quite that far back.
Okay. Well,
but I think maybe. I mean, I was reading that they had been. There's fossils from way before, maybe a couple million years before dinosaurs went extinct. So then, certainly, you know, before that, they were around.
Okay.
So it's possible. But then there's also later things that would have developed, mammals, like. But this specific plant is from, and most of the diversity is from Southeast Asia and South Asia. So there are larger animals there. There's elephants that are there that can eat it. There's giraffes in certain areas, but I guess if you go down into Africa more than anything. But then there's also like larger yak kind of, you know, forest dwellers like that. There's rhinoceroses, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So it's very possible that they were getting eaten by these really big, big animals that can that are in fact still around.
I see.
But then we probably made them into bigger forms, just like we do with the apple, where you want to breed the biggest, sweetest ones, and so you can get bigger, 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 better, better, better all the time.
Okay.
So it's very possible, and I couldn't find very much information on other species. It turns out the internet's quite obscenely devoted to this one mango. But there are other, I found some articles talking about other smaller species that are just lesser known, like the other 20 to 30, or 30 to 40 species.
Uh-huh.
And those honestly probably have much more small fruit that are more fixed for birds or monkeys,
right.
Or other kind of apes or creatures, maybe bats that are looking to get some fruit and things like that.
Okay.
So there's also some that are a little more stringent that are just not quite as good, you know, like we were saying with cherries, where sometimes they're just cherries that are, you know, botanically speaking, those are cherries, but they had not been evolved for people to eat.
I understand.
If these were ever, you know, you would think they were, you know, if we could take them down and move them around and then throw that seed somewhere, then that seed grows, that plant is still thinking, yes, this is a good investment.
Yeah, I would think ultimately the goal role of a fruit tree would be, and the whole reason that you make fruit delicious is mm-hmm. that things will eat it.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So why a seed that is so large and in charge?
Yeah. Well, in this case, it might be also that the tree just wants to make sure it can get a good canopy space. So if you have a big seed, oh. you got a lot of fruit or a lot of food in there for the little seedling to grow on, so it can push its way up higher into the understory.
Wow.
So that tree can then have a better start on life.
Because, as we know, a fruit, like an acorn, mm-hmm. is a packed lunch.
It is. The, seed. Yes. Well, No. The seed is the packed lunch for the little Shit. Seedling inside the fruit, which is the packed lunch for the rhinoceros.
I see. You know, I thought I was tying a nice little bow.
You were. You were. You just had you had tied the bows from the inside to the outside at the same time, when really there's actually a little bow on the inside than a little bigger bow on the outside.
And like the left side of the bow is a lot longer than the right side.
So it's one of those things you just pat you on the head and you're like, yes, that looks so good.
He's learning to tie.
Well, that is it. In the mango, humans and some other apes are the only primates are the only things that are affected by poison oak, poison ivy, urushiol.
Wow, no kidding.
Isn't that ridiculous?
That
no
is
insects,
ridiculous.
Snakes, other mammals, squirrels, deer, nothing.
Just us, huh?
Just us. Cats, dogs. They don't care. It's just us, our little unhairy selves.
Oh, wow, cats and dogs. Here's a quick question before we get into our review of the mango. A dog is running through the woods, rubs up against some poison oak, comes up to you, you pet the dog.
Yeah.
Do you now have poison oak on your hand?
Yes.
Okay, great.
It's the worst.
Thank you. Casey, before we get into our review of the Mangifera indica.
That's the one. Whew,
we have something very special.
Yes, we do.
From a friend of the pod.
This is the most exciting thing that we're doing. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yes, no, I totally agree with you, Casey. I'm glad you said that because I agree fully. For most of these episodes, we will have a chef of some kind make a recipe, a dish revolving around the tree in question. Mm-hmm. Today, we're talking mango. We have Daphne K. Jenkins, friend of the pod, who lives in Portland, but is originally from Hawaii. She made chichi, dango, and mango mochi.
I love that name, by
Casey,
the way.
Do those words mean anything to you?
They mean nothing to me. I think the mochi is as most as I can say.
Yes, mochi is like a chewy, yummy, gummy...
Like a rice dessert?
It's made out of rice flour.
Yeah.
It's incredible, and I've bought mochi from Daphne before. Lovely human being, nutritionist, makes amazing mochi, and we asked Daphne to give us a few words about this mango mochi, and this is what she had to say.
Hi, Casey and Alex, and hi, Completely Arbitrary podcast listeners. It's Daphne Ka'uahi'ilani Jenkins here, and I want to share with you the history of my love for chichi dango mochi. I grew up on Oahu in Hawaii, and my grandparents and I would hang out a lot when I was little. I guess I was over there being watched by them, but it really just felt like hanging out with my two favorite people. And we would go oftentimes to a mall, an indoor-outdoor mall called Ala Moana Center. We would go so Grandma and Grandpa could run errands and also so that I could walk around, get out of the house. And it was a pretty big mall for a little kid. One of my favorite stores was Shirokiya Department Store, a Japanese department store in Ala Moana Center. And in this department store, there was a food stall floor. I feel like it was the second or third floor of the department store, but it always had this amazing smell of delicious cooked things and desserts. And every time we went to Ala Moana, well, maybe not every time, but it seemed like it, I would pick up a plastic clamshell of chichi dango mochi that was made by Nishodo Mochiya, a company that made this awesome Japanese confection. And so it was little slices, a rectangular prism-shaped chichi dango mochi made of sweet rice flour. So a rice cake sort of dessert, but it has this gummy texture to it. And inside of this plastic clamshell were wax paper wrapped chichi dongle. Usually the colors that I would choose would be white or pink, or a combination of white and pink. So I'd take these chichi dongle mochi and I'd eat them in the back of my grandparents' Volkswagen van. And usually by the time we got back home to my grandparents' house, most of the clamshell was gone. I just loved the chewy, supple, milky, sweet flavor and textures of chichi dongle mochi. So I wanted to use that texture and that sweetness and combine it with the featured mango today for the podcast. And that's the recipe that you all will be enjoying. For a two-toned color, I added some matcha powder to one of the layers. And so we have like a green and golden orange contrast to each of these rectangularly cut, or however you decide to cut them, slices. So that's a little bit about my chichi dongle history. Growing up in Hawaii, very influenced by Japanese culinary textures and flavors. And then also, I was a lucky girl. Mangoes flourish in Hawaii. I actually have a mango tree in my parents' house, in the backyard, not in the house, that was planted around the time of my birth. So the mango tree and I are the same age. And then at my grandparents' house, they also had a mango tree that I just remember really being with me throughout my childhood. The type of mangoes on my grandparents' tree were called Hayden mangoes. Oh my gosh, so delicious, so firm, and with a little tartness, I believe. And then I think the ones in my parents' backyard were a hybrid of Piri and Hayden. Or maybe they were Piri mangoes. I can't remember. But there are so many different varieties of mangoes that I believe originated in India, but made their way to other tropical locations. And thank gosh, because they're delicious. So I hope you enjoy my recipe, which combines mango with chichi dongle mochi. Mahalo.
That was so good.
Casey, Daphne's the coolest human.
Yeah, that just makes my day.
So there you have it. That's kind of the backstory of this recipe.
And so one thing that I did notice, so she said she thinks it was a Hayden mango.
Yeah.
Which is flavor sweet and sour with a slight bitter aftertaste of tropical fruit.
Yum.
Fruiting of the Hayden mango in 1910 inspired the creation of a large-scale mango industry in South Florida. The industry has since become greatly reduced by the impact of development and hurricanes, so it doesn't grow as well there. But obviously, you still have some trees that are growing quite well in the tropics, specifically Hawaii.
So if you want to make this mochi at home, we have the recipe on our website under this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And Daphne, in a very considerate and cool move, switched up her recipe to include items that are more commonly found.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
So thank you, Daphne, so much.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited.
And you can follow Daphne on Instagram to see all of her amazing treats and foods and things.
And eat them. I've had her mochi before. It's so good.
Yeah, amazing. Daphne_K_Jenkins. It's all phonetic. Casey, it's time for our review of the mango tree.
All right.
Mangophora indica. We're going to give our final thoughts on this tree and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 Michelin cones of honor.
Let's do it.
Is that what it was?
Golden Michelin cones of honor.
Golden Michelin cones of honor.
Yeah, for copyright reasons.
Right. Michelin is spelled M-I-S-H-I-L-N.
Yeah.
So they can't come after us. I'm sure they're, yeah, really litigious.
Yeah, they're waiting for us.
Casey is our resident expert. We will begin with you.
All right. So here's the thing. Here is the thing, Alex.
Whoa.
I also have to say I love the color of the mango tree. And I also love that their seeds are called recalcitrant. Have you ever you know the term?
No.
It means having an obstinately uncooperative attitude towards authority or discipline.
Wow. And what these seeds don't give a fuck.
No, they don't. They're just like, huh. The seeds, they're called recalcitrant, recalcitrant because you can't store them. They, if you get rid of too much water or if you freeze them, then they die. They can't survive.
There you go.
So mangoes are what we get. So you can't save them in like big seed banks and things like that.
Wow.
And I just love the fact that there's a term for that. It's recalcitrant versus orthodox.
Okay.
Wow. Whoever came up with those terms, amazing. I just love it. Like there's, oh, this is an orthodox mango seed.
That's incredible.
Yeah, I guess it's not a mango. It would be some other different kind of seed.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, the fact that the seed is obstinately uncooperative in terms of its attitude kind of makes me dig it a little
bit. Yeah, that's great.
I do like mangoes. I think they are very tasty, especially not dried. I like the fresh ones. I think they're very good. However, I don't like poison oak. I don't like it to such a degree that it causes me to not go on hikes in places. It causes me to never want to touch the skin of a mango and walk in places that I even consider there possibly being poison oak or poison ivy, which I should say, out west, we have poison oak. As you go east of the Rockies, that's when you get poison ivy. They're different species of toxicodendron. Just to be clear, I should have said that.
Okay.
But it really doesn't matter. They all do the same thing. However, Alex, I do think this tree is nice. I think it's a nice tree. I like that it grows really big, and I like that it feeds a lot of people and that everyone really likes it. So I think this tree, even though it has a bad streak, it's wrapped in something that's awful, but inside it's got a obstinately uncooperative attitude. And I think that's worth 6.5 golden Michelin cones of honor for this tree.
6.5.
I know. I hope that's not going to ruin anything.
That is extremely low.
It's extremely low. I know. I'm thinking.
No,
about
I think
it.
You should stick with. I mean, like, I'm just saying.
I'm get
like,
so much shade for this.
Wow, that is so low for the mango.
It's a cool tree. There's something in my heart that is just. The fact that it even could remotely cause me a urushiol rash.
Sure.
Makes me want to keep my distance with a six foot pole.
Okay.
Number two, it also is a thing I've had lots of times. It's great. It's fine. I have never been like jumping out of my skin for a mango.
Okay.
I hope that's okay.
That's fine. Yeah.
I'm going to regret saying this. I know I am.
No.
I'm going to get so much mail. I'm going to get
from me, yeah.
Berated from you and Hannah, everyone. So, you know what? It's okay. It's okay.
I don't know if I have the power to fire you from Arbitrary Media LLC.
What?
But I'm going to look into it.
Why would you even want that power? Alex, I'm
all right,
offended.
Casey, 6.5 golden Michelin cones of honor. We're going to have to tighten that up.
Yeah, I like golden Michelin cones of honor. It's fine.
for the mangaflora indica.
You are almost very close.
Mangaflora.
Mangafera.
Mangafera.
Yeah.
All right.
What do you got?
Here's what I think about the mango.
Yeah.
Thank you for giving me this soapbox.
You're welcome. I'm going to turn my microphone off.
Mango, I think, is one of the most delectable fruits that we have the great pleasure of eating.
Really?
God bless the mango tree. I am so grateful that I live in a time that mangoes exist.
That there are several different species, including varieties.
Although I probably only ever eat two species.
Kent, Kiet, Hayden, Francis,
hey,
Honey.
Is this, can you shut the fuck up for a second so I can get my review?
Anyway, turn my microphone back off.
It never went off.
How do you know?
I think the fact that it causes a little bit of shit is kind of great.
Really?
I think it's here's I think there's a metaphor here, Casey.
Okay.
The mango tree is obstinate and kind of anti-authority. I think that's a great metaphor for, you know, live your life. You can't store these and eat them later. Eat them now. Enjoy them now. Be in the moment. Enjoy these delicious fruits.
I gotcha.
They're the flesh of a mango is when you get a good mango, it is more satisfying than a good, you know, pick of any other fruit. I think a good mango is a top tier fruit. It's an S plus.
Okay.
Casey, I would just be betraying myself and my morals and my values and my taste buds if I didn't give the mango tree 10 Michelin golden cones of honor.
Alex, you are kidding
I
me.
I must.
You're giving the mango a 10. That's incredible.
I must. It's an incredible fruit. It's an incredible tree.
I am flabbergasted.
The tree is gorgeous. Don't it? Let's not even. Yeah, forget about the fruit for a sec. The tree itself is a beautiful tropical tree.
I'm going to meet a mango tree right now. I'm going to this meet a mango tree, and I'm going to watch this whole video.
And it's a canopy dweller. It's a top. I mean, it's up there among the top ranks.
It's top tier. Okay.
It's all top right. tier. And it's got one of the most delicious fruits that mankind knows. I would be full of shit if I didn't give it a 10.
Okay. This is such a turnaround from the end of last season.
Yeah.
What did you give the
like a 1.9 for the green
low.
Ash.
Yeah. That is real low.
Some
and now you're
upset about that.
Well, people are gonna be upset probably that I gave it 6.5.
I don't care.
Amazing. Okay.
Yeah, there you have it.
10 out of 10
Michelin golden. No.
Golden
Michelin cones.
Of honor.
Of honor.
Stunning.
We're gonna workshop that. And maybe something new next week.
Hey, I think that's fair, but my goodness, I just have not tried a mango to the extent that everyone else has. Maybe I just don't know what I'm missing right here.
Yeah, well.
Huh.
There you have it.
Okay. Wow.
Casey, it's time for a new segment. We are calling this one Trail Snacks. Misophonia warning. I would say a light misophonia warning.
Okay, yeah.
Not like hardcore misophonia. We're not going to chew on mic. We are, however, going to taste test some tree-based treats.
That's right. This is why it's called a trail snack, because it's not a snack that you'd have on the trail.
Right.
It's a snack that you would get whilst on the trail. Then you look off to the side and you say, oh, there's a snack. I'm going to eat that. It's a trail snack.
That's right, Casey. Mm-hmm. This is a eucalyptus hard candy from the Rosella Company. So, Casey, off mic, you and I are going to take a little suckle of these candies.
I wish you told me off mic before I put it in my mouth and kept talking.
Oh, that's okay. As long as we're not chewing and smacking our lips like I just did.
Okay.
Well, I have some thoughts.
All right. I also have some thoughts.
I hate this.
What? I like it. It's almost like I'm putting Burt's Bees in my mouth.
Yes, that's exactly why I don't like it. It tastes like Vicks Vapor Rub.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I don't think it's quite that bad, but
it's what is that? Menthol?
It feels menthol-y, doesn't it?
It's very menthol-y.
Yeah. I like that. I like the menthol-iness.
It tastes like medicine.
Yeah. Really? But come on. Are you one of those kids who like, you know, like, yeah, give me some of that Dimetapp. That's delicious.
No, of course not.
Really? Okay. Like, it tasted good because it tasted good because they like made it cherry flavored. And whenever I'd get sick, I'd be like, well, if this is the worst I have to deal with, that's fine.
Oh, no, I couldn't abide by any.
I see. All right.
Medications as a child. Let me give this another suck.
I have to say, I actually prefer it because I think that as a trail snack, this would be really refreshing as I'm just like cruising through the woods.
That's a good point, Casey.
You know, that really feels like it would be a nice thing.
I think if you were in the woods and you had the fresh, cool air, you know, going through your lungs, this might enhance the menthol kind of characteristic.
Now, if I found a mango tree as I was walking by the woods and I just popped a mango off and cut that up, do you think that would be a better thing or worse than this?
1,000% better.
1,000% better. That's a high percentage.
They're not even on the same scale.
one is the sun. The other is a Pluto.
Yeah, I will not be finishing this menthol hard candy.
But it's our segment, Alex.
This eucalyptus hard candy. Oh, finishing it as part of the segment?
Yeah.
All right.
This is going to be a 35-minute long segment because this is a big candy.
Buckle up, people.
Buckle up. Anyway.
When you start chewing it, it gets even more menthol-y.
Well, isn't this going to break your teeth?
No.
Well, there you go. Well, everyone, if you want to get your snack, send us a snack and we might focus or we might feature it on the show as a trail snack.
Hey, that's fun.
Keep it in the wrapper, though.
Send it to, should I give my address on air?
Alex, you're crazy. Send us an email, and maybe... And
we'll, yeah. If you have a tree-based snack that you'd like us to eat on the air...
tell us where we can buy it.
Either tell us where we can buy it, or send us an email, and I'll give you my home address.
That's at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. That's spelled ARBORTRARY, pod.
Well done.
@gmail.com.
Casey, that was Trail Snacks.
Honestly, that's delicious.
You know what? I have had those sitting on my desk for like 2 months probably.
Yeah.
And keep thinking, oh, we need to use these. We need to use these on the pod. We finally have a whole segment based around the fact that we needed to use these.
And you hated it.
And I really disliked it, and I'm upset. I didn't know what I thought it would taste like, but I didn't think it would taste like that.
Well, I really like it.
I feel nauseous.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think that the I had someone gave us a bunch of maple hard candy snacks.
Yeah.
I just finished those like last week.
Wow.
If I had thought about it, I would have brought that because that would have wet your whistle, Alex.
It sure would have.
Those were delicious.
Casey, it's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A. This week, our question was sent to us from Mary Ellen Hawkins. Mary writes, I was out on a walk the other day through Grover Archibald Park in D.C.
Oh, Grover Archibald.
I think that stands for Detective Comics.
What?
And I saw something I'd never seen before. It looked like a big tree had halfway, quote, absorbed or grown over a smaller tree of a different species. I know trees have no problem growing over rocks or other immobile obstacles, but can they grow over other trees? Is there fiercer tree competition out there than I was aware of? Attaching a picture for your reference. Love the podcast. Your fungal associate, Mary Ellen. Thank you, Mary Ellen.
Oh, Casey. Mary Ellen. This is a great question.
The photo sent really looks like a tree is trying to eat another tree.
It does, right?
We'll post this on the Instagram so you can go take a gander for this at this picture on today's post for this episode.
Yeah, and you know what I like about this is that it is true. Like, it does look like exactly one tree has been eaten.
Yeah, so what do you reckon, Case?
I love it. I just think it looks so cool.
I'm never going to get that taste out of my mouth.
It's there forever now. Okay, so what's going on in this photo is essentially there's a big tree, and then right next to it, there was a little tree, is a little tree that's growing. But then, as we all know, trees get bigger 1 year at a time. They expand out by putting a new ring of wood along that outer section of their stem. So they essentially grow a new cylinder outside their existing cylinder, and they do that repeatedly over their lifetime, once a year, generally speaking.
Yeah.
So what happened here is that there was a big tree, and then right next to this big tree, a little sapling started growing up. I don't know what the big tree is. It looks like it could be a caria, which is a hickory, or it could be another kind of like maybe pine or a hemlock, perhaps.
Yeah, it's a big brown conifer looking.
It looks conifer, but judging from that forest and it being in DC, it's probably not. They just have very few.
Okay.
But it does. That was my first thought. However, the little seedling that's growing there, that looks like a sapling. It's more like a small tree at this point. That looks like a beech tree. Like, has really smooth gray bark. And they generally will grow in that same way where they are understory secondary succession trees, so they will grow up under the overstory of another bunch of trees in a forest, and they'll slowly take over as the later successional tree.
You can of course see the lenticels on the smaller tree.
Yes, which they have a little as they are young, but those kind of end up going away a little bit.
So
what's happening here is you had a little tree that was growing next to a bigger tree. The bigger tree is still growing faster than the little tree.
Okay.
But the trees are immovable. So for the, once they're growing, the little tree is right next to the big tree. That's the only possible place it's going to grow. It can't move over and get out from the path of this expanding, very slow lava of the stem of the bigger tree. It's going to expand out every single year. But the bigger tree cannot expand through and just push it out of the way. So what's happening is that you have this little tree that's stationary, it's stable, it's not going anywhere. So the other tree has to grow around it in the same way that the tree would grow around a rock. If there was a big boulder right there, the tree would bump into it, and then it couldn't push the boulder out of the way if the boulder was big enough, or if it was just, you know, an extension of the ground rock, you know, the bedrock sticking out. It couldn't move it, so it would essentially just start to grow around it and kind of fold over and underneath and around it from the sides.
Yeah.
So that's what's actually going on here, is that slowly but surely the bark is expanding and the tree is expanding around the existing, it doesn't matter what it is, that existing thing that is immovable. So it could that could be a piece of rebar in the ground that the tree just can't push out of the way.
I see.
But it'll just close around it slowly but surely.
Wow.
And then there's going to be a little bit of bark that's going to be pushing on either sides once it closes up. And then once that bark starts pushing on itself, it could potentially connect and then regraft itself together. And then the tree would be one cohesive unit again. It's possible. It doesn't always happen. A lot of times you just have this seam that continually rolls out on itself.
It's like the blob.
Exactly. It's exactly what it is.
I feel my sympathy goes to this little beech tree.
Yeah.
Because it couldn't help where it was growing.
It didn't have a chance.
It's just natural selection. It just the poor thing happened to be right next to this bigger tree.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so you know what that little tree is banking on, though?
What?
Is that big tree is going to die soon.
Oh.
Because if that big tree dies soon, then as soon as it's dead, that beech tree can just take up all that canopy space. And then once there's just dead rotting wood at the bottom there, that beech will then have the power to expand out.
Sure.
And kind of crush this old stump over the next several years.
Succession.
Yes. However, probably not. My bet is that this
doesn't look like a fair fight.
Yeah, the big tree looks like it's well on its way to completely taking over the little tree.
I will say, though, in this photo, at the very base of the tree, what do you see, Case?
I see a little root coming out, a little buttressing root.
Oh, well, yes, but what else do you see? Another plant.
Ivy.
Ivy.
Yeah, I do.
Which could be a bad sign for the big tree, no?
It could be, but the thing is, the ivy there, so ivy over here on the west can take over trees. Ivy on the east just is not a big problem.
Oh, okay.
It really just, it gets too cold over there and it's not quite as, honestly, I don't really know what the biggest difference is. We have a very marine climate where we just get, it doesn't get too hot, it doesn't get too cold, and generally we have a really moist winter time. Yeah, this year
was an exception. And so will next year be, and the year after.
What fun. But in this case, ivy over there just is not a big problem. It just really doesn't cause too much damage.
So okay,
over time, might have a little something to do with it, but maybe not.
I was wrong.
Yeah. You know what else? Just before we go, Alex, I do want to note to the end of Mary Ellen's question is she says, is there a fiercer tree competition out there than I was aware of? I would say you could also go listen to the Strangler Fig episode because that is way fiercer than this.
Yeah. But
this is happenstance. One tree is like, well, I'm still going to grow, little guy.
Right.
Whereas the Strangler Fig, as a little guy, slowly crawls down the big guy saying, I'm going to kill you.
This is kind of like, involuntary manslaughter.
Yeah.
Strangler Fig is like fucking murder.
Yeah, that's a serial killer. Thanks for that analogy, Alex. You're right.
Thank you, Mary Ellen, for your question. If you have a question for Casey about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. That's arbitrarypod@gmail.com. Or follow us on Instagram
True.
At arbitrarypod. You can also join the Patreon and support this little podcast. You can join the Arboretum for 2 bonus episodes a month or the Cone of the Month Club and get a unique cone sticker illustrated by an independent artist every month in your mail with a little ID card.
That's exactly right. We have so many good ones coming down the line.
Oh, boy,
do we.
We
just put in a big order.
Yes.
This is very exciting.
We have some favorite artists coming back for more cones. Let me just say.
Please.
The rest of this year is great.
Yes.
For the Cone of the Month Club. Next year is fucking awesome.
Off the chain.
We're a little ahead. I had a little fun with getting artists to do this. It's going to be a good year to join the Cone of the Month Club, as is any case.
As is any.
And Casey, you. To you I say, congratulations on another episode of Completely Arbitrary.
And to you as well. I'm excited to be back in the season. This is now the second episode. It's very exciting.
Yes. We're back in the saddle, partner.
Back in the saddle. Well, yippee-ki-yay.
Y'all come back now, you hear? See you next week. Bye.
Later. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.